Nuketown Radioactive for Sunday, July 23rd, 2005.
Good news, everyone.
Uh-oh, I don't like the sound of that.
You'll be making a delivery to the planet Trisol.
Here it comes.
A mysterious world in the darkest depths of the Forbidden Zone.
Thank you and good night.
Professor, are we even allowed in the Forbidden Zone?
Why, of course. It's just a name, like the Death Zone or the Zone of No Return. All the zones have names like that in the Galaxy of Terror.
Professor...
Off you go. Pleasant trip.
Well, folks, welcome to Radioactive number 12. I'm your host, Ken Newquist. And yes, folks, I do have some good news that doesn't actually involve you traveling anywhere near the Galaxy of Terror. I'm getting a new job. I have accepted a job as a web application specialist at a college down the street from me. And I don't mean figuratively down the street. I mean it's 8 blocks. I can actually walk to work. Walking will probably take less time than driving. This means that starting August 29th, I can say goodbye to my 2-plus-hour daily commute, which is going to have a hell of an impact on my ability to listen to podcasts. I may actually have to start exercising or something in order to find time to listen. And I'm already looking at, you know, maybe getting an iPod Shuffle dedicated specifically to that purpose. It's really huge news around here, and that's one of the big reasons why you haven't seen a lot of updates on the main Nuketown.com website, and the publishing schedule for the podcast has been kind of erratic, because as you might imagine, my day job, my life at my current day job since I told them that I was leaving has been, well, rather chaotic and just incredibly busy. And adding to the mix, the web assistant that I've been looking for the last couple of years, well, I finally got to hire one this year. So I've been training him. He just started about a week and a half ago. And it's ironic that, you know, I finally get this position, this hire that I've been looking for a long time, and now I'm actually leaving and going somewhere else. But you know what? It's going to be great for my family. It's going to be great for me. It's going to be great for Sue. The ability to actually be home from work 5 minutes after I leave, I just, you know, I can't put it into words. It's just going to be freaking awesome. And there's other perks to it too. I mean, I've actually worked at a university in New Jersey for the last 7 years, and it's fun working at a university. You get to meet a lot of great people, a lot of somewhat eccentric people as well. And there's a lot of great activities that happen on campus, but for the most part, I don't actually get a chance to take part of them at my current job because, you know, it's an hour commute to get there. It's an hour commute to get home. And that's on a good day. So, you know, if I were to go to a lecture or something at night, I'm not going to get home until midnight, if then. But now that I have the potential to just walk to work, Sue and I can actually do things like go to plays or go to art openings and stuff, because it's not going to be a huge problem to be able to go back to work, to go to something at night, to get somebody to watch Jordan, you know, to be able to have Sue there. She wouldn't have to drive an hour out. So I'm very excited about this position. I mean, the position itself, aside from the geography, looks to be really, really freaking cool. It's a lot of what I've been doing at my current job, which is developing web applications, developing the hooks between the back-end computer system at the university and the front-end website, and just developing different kinds of programs and stuff to make things work well on the website. But this job will be more of that. It'll be some amount of web design. It'll also be like research and development, troubleshooting, kind of high-level help support. All around, I think it's going to be a really great opportunity to learn some new things, work on the academic side of things, because right now I'm working on the more public relations side of things, working on the public site. This is going to be working within the with the college's library and IT services. So it's enough like my job that I feel comfortable doing it. It's enough different from my job to make it something new and exciting, and just I'm excited. I'm really freaking excited. But it has played hell with my schedule. Now, one of the things about this podcast, it's going to be this particular podcast, we need to get some business out of the way, folks. There's been some things that I've been meaning to talk about for a while and just haven't had a chance to. The first thing I want to do is actually something I should have done like 2 weeks ago, but then all hell broke loose, which is announce the winners of the Atomic Swindlers CD and T-shirt contest. That would be Chris Whitmore, Natalie Romano, and Jeff Berkowitz. I'll be sending emails to them probably tomorrow to let them know, tomorrow being Monday or... don't worry about the time, because you guys are probably listening to this a couple of days after it got recorded anyway. But anyway, they'll be getting emails from me pretty soon letting them know that they've won. And sometime in the next week or so, I'll be sending out the actual CDs and the T-shirts. In other news, I also am... Nuketown is now part of the Science Fiction Podcast Network, which you can learn more about at www.tsfpn.com. This is... this thing's been growing like crazy. It's a collection of science fiction, speculative fiction type podcasts. It's actually kind of all over the place when it comes to that. We have your hardcore sci-fi, fantasy, horror type things, your speculative fiction podcasts, and then you've got kind of the other things that are related to that, that, you know, geeks are interested in. So there's, for example, Spectacality, I think I got that name right, anyway, which is, Skepticality is entirely about, it's about debunking hoaxes, rumors, that sort of thing, taking kind of a skeptical view to the supernatural and paranormal and stuff like that. And then on the other side of things, you have, let's see, other examples. There's just everything that's kind of related to geekdom in general. So you've got podcasts that are dedicated to Star Wars. You've got just more like geeky type things like Merlafferty's Geekful Action Grip. So, I mean, generally speaking, if you're into sci-fi or into speculative fiction, you are going to find something here that you're going to be interested in. So the website, again, for that is www.tsfpn.com. I actually have a forum over there in their community forum. It's part of their larger community forums. I'm not even going to attempt to give the web address in the podcast because you guys, you know what, you're just not going to want to have to write this thing down. So it will be in the show notes, and you can stop by and check it out. That forum will bite us over until the new Nuketown forums are up. That's the other big news that's going on. I am in the process of moving Nuketown to a new host. I'm not actually redesigning the site quite yet. There's going to be a few tweaks to the visual look as I do the transfer. But basically, this new host is going to work out a lot better in a couple of different ways. For one thing, I have a higher level of access to the server, so I can get in and really do some WebMonkey stuff in terms of configuration. I also have the ability to run some really geeky things like cron tabs, which will allow me to execute Perl scripts that will basically allow me to automate a whole bunch of crap on the website. For example, the RSS feed, which occasionally I will forget to do. The other cool thing about it is that it will allow me to easily install a new forum software. So for the first time in almost the 9 years that Nuketown has been around, we'll have honest-to-God online forums, which I'm really excited about. And I think that the readers are going to like a lot, too. On that note of new sites and such... the website for my role-playing game campaign, for my Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and for my larger gaming group, the Griffin's Crier has moved to a new location. For the last, God only knows how many years, the campaign's been in existence for. Well, I guess about as long as Nuketown, so I think we're going on like 10 years or something like that. I think it's 10 years next fall. But anyway, it's for all that time, Griff Cryer has been hosted on Nuketown. And I decided to, pretty much to try out this new hosting provider. So I moved Griff Cryer over to its own dedicated server. So now you can check out my gaming group's website at www.griffcryer.com. There are online forums there as well, so if you want to get a sneak peek at what the forums are going to be like, you can go to griffcryer.com/forum. It's running just PHPBB, which is a pretty popular online forum software. I found it to work really well on the Crier. My group's really happy with it. So, if you want a sneak peek, check it out. The whole transfer for Nuketown is probably going to take about another week or so. I've populated the database, and I'm in the process of moving all the pages over. And on that note, there may be a day or two when I'm switching over the DNS entries and everything where things may be a little wonky. So if you see a bunch of errors on Nuketown, that's why. Now, one thing I haven't done in quite a while with the podcast is talk about other podcasts that I'm listening to. or rather have been listening to until I start my new job. The first one I wanted to mention was Skepticality, which I already mentioned earlier in the podcast. They have debunkings and commentary from a skeptical point of view, and being of a somewhat skeptical bent myself, listening to the show is really like audio gold. If you're fans of Penn & Teller's Bullshit, which is their debunking show that runs on Showtime, and it's available on DVD from, you buy it at any store, rent it from Netflix, whatever, then you're really going to like this show. And you can learn more about it at www.skepticality.com. And of course, the link will be in the show notes. Another podcast that I recently picked up was All Games Considered. Now, I have been searching for an RPG-centric show ever since Mortality Radio went silent. And All Games Considered is really that podcast that I've been looking for. While it doesn't have the sort of interviews that Mortality had, it's got RPG news, it's got a great amount of banter and commentary and just discussions about gaming and such, and it really fills that niche in my particular lineup. This is one of the things that I really love about podcasting is that, no one is ever going to make an honest-to-God broadcast radio show about pen and paper role-play games. It's just not going to happen. There's not enough of an audience for it. But as a podcast, it's something that becomes very possible. So All Games Considered, very cool podcast. Definitely recommend it, checking it out if you're into gaming. And yes, I did think that even before they linked to Nuketown and mentioned it in one of their recent shows. Another podcast I've been listening to is Geeks On, which is a roundtable discussion of all things geeky, including movies, games, weird science, etc. And they've got one of the things I really enjoy about it. I think it's like four or five geeks that are talking about it during the show, and they have a really great audio setup which gives each person their own speaker. So basically, as you're listening to the podcast, you're listening to them discussing things in the round, and it's a cool effect. It makes you feel like you're right there in the studio with them. So the web address for that is www.geekson.com. And again, it'll be in the show notes. Now, a couple weeks back, I was talking about how my daughter was absolutely terrified of Star Wars. She'd been seeing all the trailers for Episode 3 and did not like the Emperor and did not like Darth Vader. But I do have some good news, folks. I'd been concerned that she might have been poisoned on the whole Star Wars trilogy thing, which would just, shatter my little geek heart. But the good news is that, as it has for many adult geeks, Knights of the Old Republic has redeemed Star Wars for my daughter. She is really getting a kick out of watching me play the game, specifically Knights of the Old Republic 2. Now, I'm really enjoying this game, and I figured, wow, you know what? I can kill two birds with one stone, talk about Jordan's newfound appreciation for Star Wars, and actually get a game review in. I liked playing the original Knights of Old Republic, which had, compared to the sequel, had a kind of a harder driving, more cohesive story. But I'm really liking Knights of the Old Republic 2 more, because it offers more flexibility. When you play this game, you see a Jedi Order that is more like that of the new trilogy. They're indecisive, they're unable to see the dangers that are about them, and as a result, the Sith are very seductive. In the original game, when the Mandalorian War breaks out, the Jedi refuse to intervene, and this gives rise to Malak and Revan, the two Jedi, who break off from the Order and lead the Republic's forces in the fight against the Mandalorians. In the process, they turn to the dark side. Now, in the original game, this whole process was pretty straightforward. But in the sequel, they return to this topic, and they look at the consequences of what happened with Revan and Malak in the Jedi Civil War, and they start talking about the fact that, hey, you know what? Maybe, and here's a radical concept, the Jedi were wrong. Maybe the Jedi should have taken a role in leading the Republic to fight the Mandalorian War. Maybe the existing Jedi Order does not have all the answers. And you get the feeling when you're playing this game, in the original game when you would play it, it was like the morality choices, the paths you had to take, it was like they're hitting you over the head with a freaking hammer with what right and wrong was. And in this game, and if you happen to disagree with that, as I occasionally did, then it kind of took a little bit away from the game. But in this game, it's much more morally complex tale. And you have the ability to kind of see, take a stance that says, I do think that the Jedi were wrong in refusing to fight against the Mandalorians, and in this kind of pacifist stance that they took. And in this game, that's all right. You know, you're not going to necessarily fall from the light side by taking that kind of a stance. The other cool thing that I liked about this game, especially in comparison to the sequels, the new prequels that were released, is that because it is so much more complex, it gives a much more reasonable portrayal of the fall to the dark side, about why power and, you know, the dark side of the Force would be so seductive. In the movies, it was really kind of simplistic. You know, even in Episode 3, Anakin is all concerned about Padme, and, you know, that emotional angle turns him to the dark side. But I think it works much better in Knights of the Old Republic 2, because you can make the argument that, hey, you know, the Jedi should have intervened. Hey, you know, horrible invaders are coming, and is it worth it for me to learn these kind of forbidden secrets in order to turn back the invasion? It's a much more, I don't want to say slippery slope, but it's a much more complex approach to the whole seduction of the dark side. It has the sort of depth that I had wanted to see in the prequels and really didn't. So, hey, I gotta say, if you're into computer role-playing games, I would definitely recommend, and you're into Star Wars, I would definitely recommend checking out Knights of the Old Republic 2. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about, I've been promising book reviews, and yes, I'm going to continue with the book reviews. This time around, I want to talk about From a Buick 8 by Stephen King. Now, I know a lot of people hear Stephen King's name, and I've been a fan since the beginning, since third or fourth grade or something like that. Whenever I got to the point where I could really read adult books, I got totally hooked on Stephen King. When I mention Stephen King, you know, some people's eyes kind of glaze over, and they may not like his particular brand of horror, which, you know, generally has a group of people who make a determined stand against incomprehensible evil, and more often than not, win. The thing is that From a Buick 8 really isn't like that. It's a very different story. Now, when this book was first released, I think a lot of people looked at it and went, oh wow, it's another Stephen King story about a haunted car. Great. Didn't we do this already? Wasn't this Christine? And the short answer is no, because this is a radically different kind of horror story for Stephen King. In this book, we have a mysterious and exceptionally dangerous car, a very odd kind of Buick, which is left at a gas station in rural Pennsylvania. It's impounded by members of the state police, specifically from Troop D, and they put it in their garage. And this is one of those kind of cars that, or is a kind of object, because it becomes very clear that although this thing may look like a car, it's not actually a car. But when you're looking at this car, things are kind of out of line. There may be, I think there's like two portholes on the back right side, but on the other side there's three. There is the trappings of gears and gauges and such on the inside of the car, but none of them actually work. There's no way to turn over the car and actually drive it. It's like a mock-up of a car, but it's not really a car. It's basically, the explanation that comes to be is that it's as close to what this thing actually is as our minds are able to actually portray it. Now, as the troop is, as the state police are watching over this charge of theirs, a series of increasingly strange things happens over the years. And basically they come to realize that the car is a portal between our world and some other reality. It's kind of like a scab over some sort of a hole between these two dimensions. And the thing is that this other dimension, this other world, is so fundamentally different and fundamentally alien to us that the brain has a hard time processing it. If you're into the Cthulhu mythos, it's that kind of horror, but with more of a modern take on it. I'd say almost say something more along the lines of a Delta Green, where you know, it's not the things that go bump in the night. It's just a car sitting out in some garage outside of a state's police barracks. But it is so incredibly strange that, you know, people have a hard time getting a handle on it. And the other thing that's really cool about it, and that I think is just completely appropriate. And what reminds me of Delta Green is that, and if you're not familiar with Delta Green, I know I've mentioned it in earlier podcasts, Delta Green is basically kind of like an X-Files-ish campaign for Call of Cthulhu, in which characters take on the role of members of Delta Green, this top secret government agency, or, well, it used to be a government agency, that is charged with dealing with supernatural threats. And the thing about this book, and talking about the threat that the car represents, it's human nature to see something that's alien and want to try to comprehend it. And in this book, the members of the police barracks are trying to come to terms with what the hell this thing is. And they, one of the lead investigators, I think his name is Sandy, he is looking at this car and saying there must be a way to understand it. There must be a way to comprehend what this thing is about and these effects that it creates, where it spawns monstrosities that come out of this other dimension and lie gasping on the floor of the garage. He says there must be a way to be able to comprehend this. And the true horror from a Buick Gate, as in many Cthulhu-esque tales and Lovecraftian tales, is that there really is no way to comprehend it. It is truly outside the realm of human experience. And there is no way to come to terms with it. The only thing that you can ultimately end up doing with this thing is guarding it, trying to minimize the danger that it represents. And I think that's what it made it a really enjoyable read for me, because it wasn't what I expected. It wasn't your typical Stephen King. And it was, I think it does manage to capture a lot of what you're trying to get in a role-playing game like Call of Cthulhu, where this horror, where as the investigator, you're trying to come up with a logical and rational approach to solving problems. And when you're up against Cthulhu, it just doesn't work. Now, I am a rational kind of guy. I am a very skeptical kind of guy. So, in the real world, I don't have these kinds of hang-ups. I'm very skeptical of supernatural things. But in a book like this, I just eat it up. Personally, I think this is a good book. I give it, I'd say, probably an 8 out of 10. I think the thing is when you're going into this book, one of the things you can't do is go into it and expect to see a lot of action, to see a lot of adventure, to see heroes standing up mightily against the horrors that lurk around them. It's not that kind of a book. It's told entirely through flashbacks. It is, or almost entirely through flashbacks. It can be a little slow-moving in places, and the horror, there are no true answers that come from reading this book. But if you're into that kind of thing, or if you want something that's a little different from the norm, well, I definitely recommend picking it up. So, that would be about it for this particular podcast. I think I've covered most of the things that I wanted to talk about, and I'm trying to keep the podcasts somewhat short. Now, next up on Radioactive number 13, I am planning to do a review of Battlestar Galactica Season 1, the soundtrack, and a review of Monster Manual 3 by Wizards of the Coast. That was something I had teased doing it in this podcast, but to tell the truth, I just didn't get my notes together on the book. I'll give you just a little heads up on the Battlestar Galactica Season 1 soundtrack. Kicks ass. I have been listening to it pretty much nonstop since I got it. I've been listening to it at least like once a day at work. It's such a divergent, that's not a good word, but it's such a kind of eclectic kind of CD. It's very unlike what you would find on most other science fiction type things. Science fiction has a tendency to follow certain ruts, more or less inspired by John Williams. And this is different. They go to a lot of different sources for inspiration, and it makes for a nice, long, I think it's like a 25-track soundtrack that's just a great listen. So I'll be playing some audio clips from that, and I'll be talking more about what I like, a few things I didn't like, and that sort of thing in the next podcast, which should probably be out in another week or two. I may try and knock it out sooner rather than later. But that's it. Pretty much for this podcast. If you would like to contact me, there's a couple of ways of doing it. First, you can send an email to nuketown@gmail.com. You can also Skype me on... I'm not that often on Skype, but my username is Nuketown. If you want to learn more about the podcast want to see the previous podcasts, you can go to www.nuketown.com. /podcast. And as I mentioned, there will be a link to the new forums over at tsfpn.com in the show notes. One last thing, if you go to newtone.com/podcasts, you'll find links to Podcast Alley and Podcast Pickle, and we would greatly appreciate it if you'd like to just vote for us at those two places. I don't think we're in any danger of rising to the top of either listing, but, you know, it's nice to have a few votes racked up over there. So, that's it. Until next time, folks, have a great day, and I'll talk to you later.
This is TSFPN.com, the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, out of this world entertainment.